Those of you who want Jim Strait's websites, well, of course, we got them linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. So that's where they are. We're going to talk more about Weird Missouri, Deja Vu, and take your strange stories on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll take your calls with Jim Strait this hour. Jim, let's talk a little bit more about Weird Missouri. What about the children's ghostly hands in Sykeston?
That's a great story, George. Hey, George, if we have time, I've got a great 9/11 story that connects to Missouri that's very compelling. So if there's time, maybe we could get
that. All right, we'll get that in for sure.
Could you enjoy that? But in Sykeston, which is in southeastern Missouri, pretty near down near the Boot Hill, there's a railroad crossing in town where apparently about 40 years ago, a school bus came up to the crossing, stalled on the crossing, a train hit the bus, and multiple children were killed. Now, after that, people discovered that if they went there at midnight, allowed their car to sit and idle on the railroad tracks, that small little handprints would start to appear on their windows and on their trunk and on their car doors and the hood of their cars, if, you know, little hands are pressing up there trying to, you know, communicate. So that's the story of the hands at Sykeston. And you can, I've told that story to many people, and a lot of people have heard that story. So it's a very well-known story.
It's a great story. How about the other one about Satan's Tunnel?
At Satan's Tunnel, that's a neat little place because that is also has a railroad connection. It's an abandoned throughway underneath a railroad tunnel that sits on top of a large berm running through the countryside out in the middle of nowhere. And to get to this place, it took me quite a while to find it. To get to this place, I actually discovered two little interesting roadside oddities to how interesting it is to drive through a state and drive down the roads. And if you're not looking for things, you probably won't see them. But if it's in your mind, if it's part of your mission to look for strange, unique, odd things along the roadside, it's amazing how many you'll see. Because I actually was given directions to get to Satan's Tunnel by a guy who had created this humongous pencil laying horizontally in his lawn on display, painted up just like a number two yellow school pencil that was about 50 feet long, about 20 inches in diameter. And he said he just came out of his house one day. He saw this log laying in the yard. He said, I saw a pencil. So he got a chainsaw, carved it into a pencil, painted up and had a pencil in his yard. So,
I love it. Let's take some calls. We'll come back and talk about that 9/11 story. We'll go next to Cheyenne, Wyoming. Jessica's with us. First-time caller. Hi, Jessica. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you with us.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Loud and clear.
All right. Well, if you wanted to hear real quick, I got an interesting story about an unidentified flying object for you.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was kind of cool because most flying saucer stories I hear are always like a disc or something like that. But my experience has come back into town from Denver, and I saw this really bright blue cube in the sky, and it wasn't going fast or anything. It kind of sat there, and then it really slowly fell for just a few seconds, and then it disappeared all the way. And I thought that was just a little bit different than most of the, you know, really fast shooting, you know, lights that people have seen or anything. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Okay. So, well, thanks for that. What's the 9/11 story, Jim?
Well, it's interesting because Missouri is a cave state. It's got 6,500 cataloged caves, 22 commercial caves. I went through 7 commercial caves and 2 private caves. Now, the story that I'm going to relate to is a private cave called River Bluff Cave. It's actually under the control of the Missouri Institute of Natural Science. And the fellow that is responsible for its existence, or actually for making it what it is a fellow named Matt Forer. And basically the story is that on the morning of 9/11, the Greene County Highway Department was in the process of drilling 13 blasting holes in a hillside along Highway 49, I think it is, just south of Springfield. And they had drilled the holes, they had packed 3 of them full of explosives, and then the events of 9/11 happened. Well, not long after that, part of what the government did is they issued a nationwide cease blasting order. So they could not detonate those charges. They could not pack the other 10 holes. And for a couple of days, that's how they sat. But it was a danger. The highway department was worried about it. And they finally got permission to detonate only those 3 charges. So they did that. And when they did that, they exposed the mouth of a cave. Now, the highway department is understanding operating, their standard operating procedure is if they expose something like that, they leave it alone, they don't do any more work until they can get an archaeologist that's, you know, sanctioned by the state to come and take a look at the cave to see if it has historical significance. So Matthew Four, had received many calls like that, and he said they were always false alarm. He'd go to this hole, and it was just a hole in the ground. So he thought when he answered the phone this time, he was going to have to get up, get dressed, go out, and take a look at another hole in the ground. So he said he arrived at the site. He parks his car. He gets in within about 200 feet of the mouth of the cave. And, George, I'm 63 years old. I've seen a lot. I've heard a lot. But there's only three or four statements in my lifetime that I'd heard that have really stuck with me and just kind of like made my hair stand on end. Because Matt said, when I got within 200 feet of that cave, I smelled the Ice Age.
Jeez.
I said, man, that's a powerful statement.
That's a great story. It was probably Interstate 44, I think.
Yeah. He goes in. He spends about 10 minutes, and he says, within 10 minutes, I knew that I had just discovered an archaeological gold mine. And he said, I stayed in there longer to collect my thoughts, and also I wanted them to think that I was really giving the place a going over, because I knew right then I wanted this place sealed. So he comes out, he tells them, this is an important discovery, seal it up. So they do that. They put steel plates over the entrance. They run a sewer pipe, 30-inch sewer pipe out, 30 feet horizontally from the steel plates, then run it 30 feet vertically and close the top off with a special top. Now, at the time that myself and my son toured the cave, there'd only been 100 people allowed to go in there. The only people that go in there are academics and a rare few media people. And it's now hardwired for Wi-Fi, and they actually do academic instructions all around the world.
How about that?
But the cave has species in it that were previously unknown. It's its own isolated little ecosystem. It's like a
world to itself, isn't it?
It's a small miniature universe. It's the oldest cave on the North American continent, even though it was discovered 11 years ago. It's 1.4 million years old. You can go inside, and about 15 feet up on the wall of a mud wall are the claw marks of a short-faced bear. Now, a short-faced bear is about 30% bigger than a grizzly. And a grizzly on all fours, its shoulder is about 3 feet 6. A brown bear is about 4 feet. A short bear is about 5.5 feet. So they were big, powerful machines, and they existed about as recently as 15,000 years ago. But they have discovered countless new species. You can see striations in the walls where they have dug away, but they've actually decided to not go any further with excavation and investigation, because right now the techniques are destructive, and he's convinced that in the near future they'll develop better techniques where they won't be destroying, you know, evidence. So they have not done anything probably for the last 3 or 4 years. But what's amazing about that story, what I find so ironic and compelling, is that had the events of 9/11 not happened, they would have completed filling all 13 holes with explosives, and they would have destroyed that cave.
Jeez.
Yep. So, you know, it's, if there is any kind of a benefit to 9/11, it's that we did discover this amazing cave in the state of Missouri.
That's great. Jeff in Ferguson, Missouri, you're up with us east of the Rockies. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going, George? Hello, Jim. Nice to speak with you both tonight.
Are you sure?
I have two quick questions, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
One is about a possible UFO event that happened in the St. Louis area around July 4th in the 90s. Have you heard anything of that event? And second, have you heard of specifically any, when you were writing your book, any strange occurrences in the city of Ferguson, where I live, when you're writing your book? And I'll take the answers off the air. Thank you.
You take care of the city of Ferguson question, if you have any there, Jim, and I'll take care of the UFO story.
Okay, you go first.
All right, well, that was probably the story where the police officers near Millstadt, Illinois, which was right across the Mississippi from St. Louis, saw a triangular-shaped object, huge object, that they chased. And I got to tell you, they have never seen anything like that before. I mean, this was a monster object, much like the 1997 Phoenix case as well. That was in Millstadt, Illinois, right across the river from St. Louis. Anything about Ferguson out there where he lives?
I remember that case you were talking about. Ferguson, not Ferguson specifically. Probably the closest thing would be Peevely, Missouri, which is a little bit south of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
In Peevely, there's supposed to be an underground UFO base. Now, I had heard about it, and I went into Peevely. It's actually one of the first stops I went to when I started doing my research there. And I went into the township building, and there's three or four ladies, all probably about 50 years old, sitting around doing their work. And here a guy from the East Coast comes in asking about the underground UFO base. And ladies were stunned. You know?
What about the floating blue babies? What's that story?
Yeah, the floating blue baby. That's in a little cemetery down by Morley, Missouri, Carpenter Cemetery. And I learned about that one from a hotel clerk where I was staying in a hotel. And she said, you know, when we were in high school, we used to go back out there, and you would drive out this road. It ends at a railroad track. It dead ends there, and then off to the right is a cemetery, which probably is populated by probably 500 tombstones, and they're all fairly aged. And she said, we could turn our headlights out across there, and mist would come up, and you would see this blue thing floating out across the headstones. And she said it was very repeatable, and many people had seen it. She said the exact words, it scared the bejeebers out of her, and she would not go back. So evidently in Carpenter Cemetery, if you go out there at midnight and shine your headlights out across the cemetery, the likelihood of seeing a floating blue baby is pretty great.
I love it. Next up, let's go to Greg in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, world.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm out here at the lumber mill. I work the night shift out here. In fact, I'm at work right now. And sometimes I walk over to the snack machine, you know, get me some peanuts or something. And when I'm walking between the wood sheds, I'll have, like, one night I had two 14-foot boards come slung out at me. You know, pow, pow. Now, you know, 14-foot boards, and I'd say probably got about a good 10 feet or so of these things were chucked. You know, they didn't hit me. They landed out there in front of me. And I'm looking around, I said, well, it ain't no possums, there ain't no raccoons throwing that stuff. And, you know, we've had some people die out here and stuff. So I don't know, maybe some ghosts. And then when I'm running the sorter bays up here, they're about 6 foot up in the air, and we got an air compressor down there. And in the air compressor, there's a access door. And I'm sitting up there walking the sorter bays one day, and I'm just farting around, looking around. Next thing you know, I see this little creature come walking out of there. And he's probably about, I don't know, 3 foot, 3.5 foot tall. It's kind of troll-looking thing. And I'm just looking at it, and he didn't look up at me or nothing. He just walked into the sorter bays and disappeared. And it wasn't like 2 minutes after that, my sorter bays, they just, you know, knocked the chains off and all this stuff. So, gremlins, I don't know. Guys out here think I'm nuts, but I said, hey.
You saw him.
What I see.
Did he look like a little man?
No, it was like a little troll-looking thing. It had kind of like a big head for the size of its body. Kind of muscular arms on it.
Did he have
green?
Was he wearing clothes?
No clothes or nothing like that. Just like leathery skin type stuff.
Jeez.
So just, I don't know, he had like a big, the head was bigger than you think it'd be for a body.
And yeah.
It was kind of come up, you know, to a point, sort of. Not real pointy, but, you know, kind of didn't want like a human face, kind of stuck out there. And
he went, and that was it for him.
What's that?
He went in and never came out.
Well, maybe they're gremlins or something, you know, because he gets in there, and next thing you know, the sorter bays go down, knocks all the chains off the sorter bays, and we got to stop and fix that stuff. So, just crazy stuff.
That's a great story. That's book number two for you, Jim.
There you go.
Little Gremlins of Missouri.
I give him credit. If that happened to me, I wouldn't be working at the mill anymore.
Let's go to Miami, Florida. Paul, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Paul.
Hello, George.
Hi.
And Jim. Hey, I have a story that you missed, Jim, with
okay.
The arch. I'm not certain the year. Whenever the World's Fair was at New Orleans, 80 or 82, somewhere in that circa. Anyway, I have a friend. I knew him here in Miami, and he moved back to his hometown in New Orleans. And he was a helicopter pilot. He was hired to fly the Army Corps of Engineers up to the beginning of the Mississippi River.
Okay, and that was in 84, by the way.
Okay, well, I can't remember what year it was now because I'm 76 years old.
Oh, no, that's all right. That's right. 1984.
Okay, 84. All right, because I went to the World Fair and stayed at his house. His name is Leonard, and I won't give his last name, but he told me, and of course, they were taking movies, and he was flying with the Army Corps of Engineers underneath bridges and so forth. And when they got the Army Corps of Engineers that were with him said, listen, when we get to St. Louis, can we fly through the arch? He said, well, wait, we'll see when we get there. When they got there, he says, okay. So they flew through it. And then on, and by the way, the movie's going all the time. Movie camera's going. And when I went to the World's Fair there in New Orleans and stayed with the house of my friend, he told me, you'll see the movie. And we did. And it was on a barge. And I saw the movie, but they cut out the part about going through the arch. However, you know what happened to him?
What happened?
He lost his license for a period of time. His helicopter license was taken away because he flew through the arch.
Which is a no-no for a pilot. You know, that 1984 World's Fair, they started bouncing checks. They were in financial trouble. The government had to step in and bail them out. They were bouncing checks to everybody in those days. Unbelievable. Unbelievable as well. Jim, we're going to take a break in a couple minutes. I want to come back and talk about Deja Vu, your other book, and we'll also take more phone calls as we will. Would you give out your websites verbally for us, Jim?
Sure. For Weird Missouri, it's www.weirdmissouri.com. My personal website is jim@straighttalks.com, StraightTalks.com. And Deja Vu All Over Again is www.DejaVuAllOverAgainBook.com.
Next up, we go to Ray in Washington, D.C. Take it away, Ray.
Yes, sir. I was wondering about Mothman. I know I've listened to some of your shows over the years, George, and there's this science fiction film. I've seen it twice on the Sci-Fi station about Jeepers Creepers, and I was wondering, is Mothman based on that? I know Mothman was seen at 9/11. He's shown up in Wisconsin and Missouri, where some other strange things have been seen, besides UFOs. And I was wondering if you've had any recent thing.
I think Jeepers Creepers was based on the Mothman story. It wasn't the other way around, because the Mothman came from John Keel's book on Mothman. And then, of course, you know, they turned that into a movie with Richard Gere. And then, you know, of course, all the offshoots came out after that. But you're right. Mothman shows up at some of the strangest tragic events that we've had, you know, bridges that fall and everything else. It's a very strange, strange story. Jim, can people email you stories if they like?
Absolutely. I'd appreciate that. If you just send it to jim@straighttalks.com, that'll get to me, and that would be terrific.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back, final half hour with Jim Strait. We'll take your phone calls before we get into our open lines. We're going to talk about Deja Vu all over again when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll start those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. But when we come back with Jim Strait, let's talk about Deja Vu all over again and take your calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, tell us about Deja Vu all over again. What's the premise of this work?
Well, Deja Vu All Over Again is my second book. After Weird Missouri, I had a couple of false starts with books. And then Deja Vu All Over Again I completed about 6 months ago. And the premise of it is it's based loosely on it has a Mayan connection to December 21st, 2012. And essentially we discover in modern times that the Mayans had juggled time. And that the time that they had juggled it to was December 21st, 2012. So in the final 57 hours leading up to the calendar turning December 21st, the story is really a roller coaster ride of essentially two people trying to prevent that from happening in modern times.
Is it fiction based on fact?
Well, it's fiction based upon an interpretation of what made
sure.
the Mayan calendar. The deja vu aspect of it came in. I needed a hook for the story, and I didn't know quite where I was going with it. And then I came into my house and discovered my then 24-year-old daughter in the middle of a grand mal epileptic seizure.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, completely out of the blue. She had, at least to our knowledge at that time, she had no indication that anything was ever going to be wrong with
24
her.
24 years old?
Yeah.
Never showed it as a kid, right?
Oh, nothing.
Jeez.
So we go through the emergency thing, and then we go through the doctors and the tests and all that. And while we're doing the testing and all that, she reveals to me that for the last year and a half prior to that grand mal seizure, she'd been having hundreds of these miniature seizures where she would get brief instances of deja vu, her mouth would water, she'd have visual problems, and she just attributed it to that was just her new normal, and she didn't anticipate this big thing coming. So going through that, I thought, well, I'm going to incorporate deja vu into the story, and it becomes a pivotal part of the story, and then the title just became obvious, deja vu all over again.
What do you think is going to happen on December 21st, 2012? Anything?
Well, leading up to it, I think there's a lot going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be a media frenzy. But I think the 22nd is going to come, and we're going to look back and say, well, that was interesting and fun. And I mean, I plan a long bicycle ride on the 22nd.
Sure, we're going to say, what happened?
Yeah. But, it's an interesting thing to think about, and it gave me an opportunity to finish this book, and it was a rewarding thing. And, when I wrote Weird Missouri, it kind of fell into my lap, and I thought, well, writing one book can be a fluke, but if you write two, maybe that means you actually can be a writer. So I wrote the Deja Vu all over again, and then I just completed a third book called Thomas Jefferson is Missing. So I've written three now.
Good for you.
I'm thinking maybe I am a writer.
I think you are, too. Once you go that route, the three, you are. It's interesting. I've been talking about December 21st, 2012 for years now.
Yeah. But
I've been saying for the last several years, I think it's going to be a solar event. And look what's happening right now.
Yeah.
It's all over the news.
Yeah, it is.
So who knows? Let's go to our wild card line, Frank in Sacramento, California. Hi, Frank. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I have a little story. I don't know how this worked into what you guys are talking about there, but I had several times in my life I've thought about somebody and then they called me right afterwards. But this one particular time I had done this woman wrong and I hadn't heard from her in about 4 years. And so I was going through my list in my computer and I was deleting people that I hadn't heard from in a long time. And so I was thinking about her, and I thought, well, gee, what if she ever called me again? And, she'd say, I'd say, who is this? And she'd say, this is Carla. And I'd say, Carla who? And she'd say, Carla X. And I'd say, well, Carla, I thought you didn't like me anymore. And she'd say, well, yeah, but, you were really a lot of fun. And so, anyway, about 5 minutes later, the phone rang, and the person says, hi, Frank, and I say, who is this? And she says, Frank, this is Carla. I said, Carla who? Exact same conversation. So, and just the other day, I hadn't heard from somebody in a long time, and I was thinking, gosh, I wish that person would call me, and the next day they called me. So, that sort of thing happens to me a lot.
That's magical.
Another time, I would like to tell you, I used to do prenatal massage, and a woman had, she had had a baby, and she hadn't come to me in a long time, it had been a year, so she had had a baby, and she called me up and I said, oh, congratulations, you had a baby. What is it? And I could see her in her kitchen with a baby girl. And I said, oh, it's a girl. And she said, yeah, it's a girl. How did you know? And I couldn't really explain to her that I'd just seen her. I said, where are you? And she said, I'm in my kitchen.
Wow.
So,
yeah, you couldn't tell her that. She'd think you were a peeping Tom, Jim.
Exactly. She'd think I was nuts.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's a great story. Thank you for that. Next up, let's go to Calgary, Canada. Andrea, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for calling.
So, yeah, I was just calling in to say that I have a different kind of deja vu. I have regular deja vu, but I have deja vu where I realize that it's not deja vu. I actually dreamt what happened exactly. It's like two blueprints moving on top of each other, and I realize they're identical. And then I realize I actually dreamt that moment.
When do you realize that? When the event occurs?
Well, actually, it happened to me 3 weeks ago at the Conscious Life Expo. I turned around to say something to somebody, and I realized I'd been in that exact moment in a dream. But it sort of slows down for about a second and a half as I realize that I'm looking at the same thing I've seen in a dream.
Now, you should be able to use that for some incredible events and power.
Well, I do all the time.
Do you?
Maybe.
You should. You really should.
I don't have proof. I don't have proof.
All right. Well, that is a gift. You got to write a book on dreams, Jim. It would be huge.
Well, you know, the human mind is a fascinating instrument, and all these things, you know, deja vu and jamais vu, it's, you know, all these things that, you know, what she just related to us, I've heard that before. As she's telling me, I'm thinking, have I experienced that before? It's, you know, there's so many things that are unique to the human species that those things, that's the kind of things I find infinitely fascinating. And a dream book would be an interesting book.
Let's go to Dan in Independence, Missouri, home of the late President Harry Truman, if you remember who Harry
was. Yeah, his
was.
Funeral's over.
There you go, Dan.
The reason I called was back when Linda Moltenhau talked to you about 2 months ago and said Kansas City is a hotbed of UFO activity,
yeah,
and so on. And I thought to myself, wow, you have no idea. I look to the east when I open my front door, and we have a lot of light pollution from Kansas City side. So, but I'm looking towards the dark, and I'm looking above trees that have no leaves. And you can see this in the summertime, but you see more of it in the wintertime, because it's so easy to see. And it's like two stars. There's usually four stars all together, and they kind of play cat and mouse. They're moving stars.
Pretty dramatically? Not this flicker that we see
of
atmosphere.
No, they look like an ordinary star. And then you watch them long enough, and then they move like what looks like in the sky, you know, 100 feet away or whatever.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah, that's a lot.
And then another one will move. You know, there's usually two of them that will go this way, sometimes three. And I swear, every night I could line my driveway with chairs and sell tickets to see this stuff. It is so obvious.
What do you think, Dan, is going on?
I don't know. They play cat and mouse, and it just goes on, and then they stop and act like stars again. And like last night, I was at, my wife goes to work at 3 a.m., and I was out there watching them again, and these two are playing cat and mouse, right? I mean, we're talking, you know, a star looks like it's really far away.
Oh, sure. And I assume other people are seeing this too, right?
I've talked to a few neighbors, but you don't want to go around telling everybody that you're seeing these things, because nobody ever looks up.
So you're the only one who's seeing this?
No. I have friends. I said, I've seen these, and they say, yeah, you should have seen what I saw the other day. And he just lives about 6 blocks away. And so rather than being known as the nut on the block, I just watch them.
You just stay quiet.
The light show.
Sometimes that might be the smarter thing to do. This farmer in southern Missouri, Jim, does he let people come in to witness all these other things he sees?
Oh, yeah. He has a deck on the back of his barn where they throw barbecue parties, and the people all come at night, and they just wait for the lights to arrive.
What's the city? Do you remember?
Yeah, that is Dover, I believe.
Dover?
Yeah, let me get my map.
Dover, Missouri?
Yeah, Let me think.
I don't know if there is a Dover, Missouri. Is
it? Maybe it's.
It's south, right?
Yeah, it's way south. It's just real close to the Arkansas border.
Is it a little town?
It's very small. Yeah, it's about 20 miles east of West Plains.
20 miles east of West Plains. So it would be between Poplar Bluff and West Plains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a real dinky town. Okay.
It is real tiny.
Okay, next up, let's go to Alta Loma, California. Richard's with us, west of the Rockies. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, it's great to be on your show.
All right.
I enjoy driving home late at night and listening.
Thank you.
Listen, in 1974, I was a missionary for my church in southern Missouri in the Ozarks and was moved to Joplin, Missouri, got to be friends with a family. My dad said one night, hey, let's go out and I'll show you the spook light. Well, I'd never heard of this thing, but I said, sure. So my missionary companion and I went with this family in their big station wagon. We drove out down this dark country road. It was gravel road, and we stopped in the middle of the road, and we get out, and he says, well, look down there. I looked way down across this wide space, kind of a sloping road, very dark, lots of stars out. I could see what I thought was a little porch light way off in the distance, and nothing unusual or strange. He said, that's the spook light. So I looked at this thing, I thought, well, big deal. So I said to my missionary companion, let's walk down the road and get a little closer. So we started walking down the road and went about 100 yards ahead of where the car was parked. And all of a sudden, as I was watching that light, it started to move around a little bit, and then it started coming towards me. And it seemed to get brighter and brighter. It was like a freight train light coming at me. And I yelled, let's get out of here. And the other guy and I, we both turned around and started running. Ran back to the car. I slipped on the gravel, scraped up my hands, got up, and made it back to the car safely. And nobody else had seen the light get brighter or move or anything. But the other guy and I had both seen the same thing. Very strange.
They just don't see these things. Other people don't see these things, Jim. That's the sad part about it.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. Yeah, and George, the name of that town is Rover, not Dover.
Rover. That's right. I didn't think it was a Dover. Rover. Okay. Let's go next to Wills Point, Texas. Jimmy's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Hey, nice to talk to you, George.
You too, Jim.
Long-time listener. Been listening since my story happened. I had a lifetime musician. It was the summer before we graduated high school, and we went to the Lake of the Ozarks. A friend of mine's who played in the band's father had a studio there on Lake of the Ozarks.
Ah, okay.
And we were recording our first album there anyway. We go out at night fishing out on Lake of the Ozarks. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
But sure am. Absolutely.
Huge, huge lake. But anyway, we're fishing. And all of a sudden, we look up and this iridescent light just pops out of nowhere. Just pops, just clear as day. And you couldn't really tell how far up it was. And we're watching it, and it blinks out, pops up again, probably 20 degrees over here. Still watching it in awe, you know. And it comes down and breaks off into five different orbs. And they're flying around. And, you know, by this time, we've all dropped our fishing poles, and we're just staring at this thing.
And they looked like they were all under control, right?
They were definitely under control. And it seemed like as they knew we were there, you know. And it was a very, very dark park. Well, they all come back together and come down almost, I mean, right on top of it. And go about 100 yards, then go into the water and go. You can see them going under the water. And just turned to the side of the lake, and we're just standing there in awe, you know. And we, my friend's dad, he cranks the boat up, and we head back home very fast. But we went to the spot the next day, and there was a huge cave there where this thing had went into. I don't know, what was controlling it or anything. And I really don't like to tell the story because people will think you're nuts. But it was really an incredible thing, and that was actually the same year that I started listening to Art Bell. I'm going to date myself because it was It was the year before I had graduated high school, but anyhow, that was a very mysterious thing that happened over Lake of the Ozarks. Is there any other?
This cave was that big for this object to go into it, huh? Wow.
Well, you couldn't pull your boat into it, but you could if you wanted to get down and swim into it. Of course, we didn't do it, but we went over and investigated it the next day. We could see where it went. But, you know, it didn't leave any marks or anything, but we could reference point that that's where the thing had disappeared. I don't know if it went into an underground cave or, you know, what was going on with it. But, and since then I've seen a couple of things, nothing like that. I mean, believe me, it changed my whole life and the direction of the album that we were recording. And so,
you got to send us a little CD of your music, Jimmy.
I'll definitely do that. I'm playing with a band called the Texas Rambler Band now. We've been around since 1990. No good friend of yours, Billy Gibbons.
I love Billy. Love him.
Oh, man. Yeah, I stole so many licks from Billy.
He is now, I think, the best living guitarist ever.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, tastefully.
He would always say Jimi Hendrix was better than him, but with Jimmy gone, Billy's all by himself.
Well, on the Dick Cavett show, Jimmy's the one that pointed to Billy. Well, they asked Jimmy who's up and coming guitar player.
Then he pointed to Billy, huh?
He pointed to Billy.
Yeah, but that's a great story.
Definitely a great guitar player. Right.
Yeah, get it to us, Jimmy. I'd love to play your CD during one of our Sunday night shows.
I sure will.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, great. Hey, Jim Strait, we're almost out of time. If people in your neck of the woods want to hear your radio show, how do they find you?
Well, they go to WIFI 1460 AM or WNJC 1360 AM, and I will be there starting April 1st on Sunday evening.
Good for you. Good for you. Don't knock us off the air now, Jimmy, okay? You know.
I'm going to try.
Good. Hey, good luck to you and your books, too.
Thank you.
Jim Strait, his books, two of them, Weird Missouri, Deja Vu All Over Again, and guess what? Right around the corner, we've got special open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I'm going to open up a hotline. It's going to be called tonight the Outrageous Line. Plus, the History Channel sent us a couple sets. I'm going to give them out once a week if I can, of year number 3 of Ancient Aliens. I want to give the entire set away. It's the whole year, but you're going to have to guess a question. You're going to have to answer it. I'll be back in a moment with open lines on Coast to Coast AM.